This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. In Richmond, you can listen to us on 910 The Fan or 105.1 FM. We're streaming live on the Odyssey app. All across the country, you can take us on the go. Of course, you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. This is like an old school moment for us.
It's like full circle.
So about 25 years ago, David Bernad, who we called Clank David at the time, was playing college basketball at McGill, I believe it was.
Is that right?
Well, I went to go play. My voice is almost up. But I hurt my ankle freshman year.
Oh, right.
And I ended up not playing. But I think it was between my freshman and sophomore years, I worked for you guys. 25 years ago. Yeah.
So he worked with Brett.
25 years ago?
Man. He worked with Brett. CK was not an intern, but CK was like an associate producer. Now he's like the big boss. He was saying it's wild. I was like, yeah, CK runs this. Doesn't run the building, but he's...
Well, he runs a lot of the company.
He's a big Willie.
Yeah.
But hold on. Let's get David's story. So when you decided you wanted to intern at a radio station, what were you thinking? Just anything to get into the sort
Did
of
Did you listen to us at Bullis? Like, you went to Bullis.
I was obsessed with you guys. So I grew up listening to Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Grew up listening to you guys. I was obsessed with talk radio, sports radio.
Right.
And I really wanted to work for you guys. And so I had a connection through DeMatha, coached by Kibbs, who knew.
Oh, yeah, Hibby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
So he connected me with you guys, and thank you. And got me the job. But something I should tell CK 25 years later, I actually faked my letter from McGill to get the job. I forged
it
all. I had to get college credit, and they said no.
So I remember, you just said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember being in my freshman dorm, and I literally had someone fake a document for me to get the job.
So. That's okay, man. Great. It worked out.
So you came, and you're like, all right, but you were obsessed with talk radio. I get it. So was I. So were a lot of us that were here. That's probably who I felt, Valdez and Drabby and CK, and a lot of us are in radio. You do the internship with us, and then do you finish school? Like, what happens?
Yeah, I had the best summer, first off, working for you guys. And I don't know if you remember, I was like your stuttering John. You would send me out to ask obnoxious questions of athletes, and I was fearless.
Did you find the Will Clark?
I know, but I have the interaction with Brett.
I sent a text to Brett, and I said, I was like, you know, we're gonna have David on the show tomorrow. It's like, what do you remember about him the most? I was like, I remember, you know, the celebrity shootout with Will Clark, because he was kind of behind Brett. Brett was asking questions, and Brett said he was nervous, and then David repeated him, nervous man, nervous.
That's the line I remember from him the most, nervous man, nervous.
That's his signature line on the Junkies. Mm-hmm. And then Brett gets choked out by Will Clark because he was bitter.
Yeah.
And we would do that. But then he said another thing about David, and this is a tried and true. I told this to Brett. This is a tried and true formula that we used to goof on him for not banging enough chicks.
Oh, right, right. I bet he solved that problem.
No comment. Yeah.
But that was like, I was like, well, that's pretty much fill in the blank for whoever is like our young guy.
But like, how old were you at that
That's
point?
Evergreen
like,
for the 20, show.
Right?
Like,
I was 20.
Okay.
20. Right.
Right. Yeah. Look, when you're 20, you're still trying, like, you're trying to find your way around
all
like,
right, hold on.
With women.
For know? People that don't know, that are just tuning in, just give David, Cakes, you could do it probably off the top of your head, just his top resume.
Well, I mean, he's executive producer of The White Lotus.
Right.
He produced Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney. He did Jury Duty, executive producer, which we loved on, I believe
hysterical.
That was on Prime.
No, yeah. Or was it Pluto?
Freebie, Prime, whatever,
yeah, okay. Yeah.
Whatever they're calling themselves.
But anyway, going back to what Eric said, so how did you
and those are just some
get
of
into
it? Not for people to understand who we're talking
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I don't remember what you were studying in college.
So I knew I wanted to be a producer. I think working for you guys was like a thrill and kind of like...
It was like a one-off
yeah,
type
but like
thing.
A bucket list thing for me. And then I went back to McGill, honestly, truly. And I kind of just was hustling. The next summer I went to L.A., I interned for a producer at Warner Brothers, and then I eventually graduated and I really wanted to work in the mailroom. I wanted to start at the bottom. It was like this fantasy. And I think I used you guys or tried to use you guys to get connections to LA to help me get into the mailroom.
There's no way that helped though.
It did not help, but I tried.
Right.
I tried.
There's no way.
Yeah, I tried.
It was a good theory.
We don't have a lot of clout
Listen,
in Hollywood in case
we were syndicated
noticed.
For 3 years, so we were national for 3 years.
Those were those 3 years.
Yeah.
But I really did. I tried to like help you. I think you guys tried to connect me with an agent or something. And then I went out to LA and I was like, you know, thought I was going to be, it was going to be easy. And I remember it took me about 6 months to get my first job in the mailroom. I was just grinding and hustling.
What does that mean when they say the mailroom? Is that like working at the freaking post office? Like, what does that mean?
So back then it was really a mailroom. So I was, you know, you'd have to wear a suit. And you would literally push a mail cart and deliver mail to people. And this is when scripts were not emailed. They were printed.
Right.
And I would draw. I mean, I did, you know, crazy stuff. And I was really ambitious. So I would go into people's offices and I'd be like, whatever you need, I'm your guy.
Right.
So I was doing crazy stuff. You know, like, doesn't exist anymore.
I got abused on radio, so I can handle whatever you guys have to throw
by the way, kind of. No, but yeah. And so then I literally was delivering mail, and I would deliver packages, and, you know, ex-client was drunk and left his car at this bar. You have to go pick up the thing. And, you know, this actress is afraid to drive on the highway, so can you go to her house and
follow her? So, you could really network this
way. Yeah, but, like, doing really weird things.
And you showed people you would do whatever it took to get your foot in the door.
Exactly.
So, you had no life.
I had no life. I was working, you know, making $25,000 a year, working 80 hours a week.
But you loved it.
Loved it. Every second.
Did you have to do the bit where you dressed up as, like, Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean? Like... outside of the Chinese theater to like augment your salary, like 24K in LA doesn't go a long way.
No, I was living with two roommates in a tiny place, you know, paying $400 a month in rent and live like eating, you know, Slurpees and hot dogs and chips at 7-Eleven and just grinding.
Sounds like my college career.
We did the show.
We had that in common. Yeah.
Sounds like the life.
Yeah.
But then it's just a hustle. And then I started just producing. I would meet young filmmakers and producing short films, and Funny or Die had just started. And I was doing, I did a lot of the first Funny or Die videos and then just hustling. And I eventually met Mike White, who I do, you know, White Lotus with. And
so you're always like a creative guy too, not just like a hustler. Like you knew, and I heard you talking in the background, like you're a big reader.
Yeah.
Were you always that way?
I think so. I mean, the truth is, and you know, Mike Hibbs at Bullis, my basketball coach, and I flew him out for the premiere last week in
Thailand.
LA. And I flew him in. I did a Thailand premiere last week, and then I did an LA premiere. And
For
me, that was like a real like emotional moment because I told him when I was in high school, I'm going to fly you out to a premiere, and he came. And it was really his English class, to be honest. That really
he was actually a great English teacher.
Great
I had
teacher.
Him my freshman year. Yeah, he's great.
And he really
so he was at DeMatha.
Yeah, and then
at Bullis.
Yeah.
Got it. He's been around a lot. Yeah,
he really got me hooked on stories and reading, and changed my life. And the truth is, like, and I told him this last week, like nothing will ever be as tough as those Bullis basketball practices. And when I started in the mailroom, you know, you have these guys who are yelling at you and kind of grinding, but I would be like, nothing.
You're nowhere
near as tough as Mike Hibbs. So.
Right.
All right. We're joined by David Bernad. Right now, he's the producer of White Lotus.
Season 3.
The
top producer.
Episode 1 came out on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was a banger.
Yep.
It was a good one.
It was very good.
Episode 2 on Sunday on Max. So let's be honest. We've goofed. a lot about D-Train. I think we got to address it. He put us in the movie D-Train.
We didn't
really know what we were getting into. There's a twist in that movie.
Oh, there's a dark theme to that, right?
I'll tell you something funny is, first off, the movie went to Sundance, played in competition, which is the hardest section to get into, killed. Uh-huh. You made a massive mistake. We sold it to the wrong distributor. But there's a whole storyline about Banana Boat in that movie, and we had to go and get product and get them to give us their likely. So when they ask you what the movie's about, mm-hmm. we're like, okay, well, we're not going to tell them everything.
Right.
There's a big twist.
Yeah.
So we just told them, we just sent them the scenes that had Banana Boat. They were like, cool.
Okay.
Jack Black, James Marsden, sounds funny. I'll never, for the rest of my life, forget the looks on their faces at the premiere when they realized what they had signed up for.
Right.
Shock. Yeah. Right. Never heard from them again.
By the way, James Marsden, jury duty.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in Paradise right now, which is really good on Hulu. I've noticed this in series, like on Max or whatever. Do you have go-to actors and actresses that you put, like, that's one of your go-tos?
Yeah. So James and I became really close after D-Train, and he's one of the funniest, if not the funniest person I've ever met.
Seems like a good dude. Like,
excellent human. Yeah. And we've worked together now 3 or 4. I did these. Did you guys ever see 7 Days in Hell? Samberg is a tennis mockumentary on HBO.
Okay.
And then I did one, which are really fun. And then we did one about the Tour de Pharmacy, about the Tour de France. Mm-hmm. Marsden's in that. And then when I was casting Jury Duty, I'm like, I need a famous person who's really funny, who's not going to ask me too many questions. And I think when James signed up for it, he had no idea what he was signing up for, genuinely. So he called me like the first week when we were doing rehearsals. And he's like, wait, what is this show? I was like, he really had no idea. But he's amazing. So so for me, Immaculate came out of working with Sydney on season one of White Lotus. And I will say, I was in Thailand making White Lotus, and I heard the review you guys did. Someone did a great review of Immaculate, which was thrilling for me. So thank you. I still check it on you guys. I'm still, for me, when you guys something, it's the biggest compliment.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
It's true.
Well, that's Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
I guess you never met Kevin McCarthy, but that's who did the review.
Kevin's like one of our other stars that's blossomed from the show. David's up there. I think David might be our biggest star. I think he's surpassed Kevin. Yeah, for sure.
I said David, Brett's killed it.
Yeah. And we're still stuck here.
Same losers.
Like, we're just doing this forever.
Did you know Sydney Sweeney was going to blow up like she has?
Yeah. I met her in a meeting. She came in and pitched me an idea for a TV show. And I was like, oh, this woman's a star. And she was so different from her.
The jugs? How'd you know?
Aura. She probably had an aura to her.
Yeah, she had an aura. No, but I take meetings with so many people, and I've met thousands. You know, you take these general meetings, and she came in, she just kind of had that X factor, the eye test.
Was she a complete unknown at that point? She had done a few things.
She had done Euphoria. When I met with her, she was like she's completely different from that character in real life. So you realize how good of an actress she is.
How talented, right.
Yeah. And so then when we were casting White Lotus, we were casting it really quickly. You know, we needed someone for that part. I maybe her agent called or casting director brought her up, and I was like, oh yeah, she'd be perfect for this part. And we kind of,
I still don't understand how you make the transition from doing odds and ends and, you know, picking up drunk actresses, and then, you know, you do some stuff for Funny or Die, which I guess is really maybe your first break, right? Yeah. But how do you discover, like, and know and other people trust that you really are a creative guy? And
it's funny. I'm like, on reflection, it's hard. I couldn't even tell myself how to do it.
Yeah.
But it was really genuinely just hustle.
Hard work.
And
who gave you your first break, though, that really crossed you over?
So Mike White. So I was Mike.
Tell me more about him.
Yeah. Mike is the greatest. Mike, you know, wrote School of Rock. Wrote The Good Girls, Jennifer Aniston movie. And
so that's Jack Black, School of Rock, again, connections. So he did that. Yeah. He does D-Train.
Exactly. And so Mike then did Nacho Libre and was in post on this movie called Year of the Dog. And I was working at UTA in the mailroom, and I was working for an agent, and I wanted to be a producer. And so Mike's assistant at the time was like, why don't you come work for Mike? Mike's starting a company, a Paramount, and you should do that. And thought about it and of course jumped on it. It's funny, I went to go interview with him, and I was wearing my cheap suit and I had really cheap shoes on, and Mike hated my shoes. And it was like
right away,
he's like, this guy's not cool. And didn't hire me. And his assistant, who I had always been nice to and kind of paid it forward, and she forced Mike to hire me. And that was 20 years ago. And I was hustling and grinding.
Grilling his shoes now. He's wearing white Nikes.
All right. And I was his assistant, and I was hustling and making these short films on the weekend, and I made a bunch of digital shorts. I did something with Ashton Kutcher, and I was doing these, like, did James Franco, Mila Kunis, Funny or Die video. And Mike gets a show picked up at HBO called Enlightened, this Laura Dern show, and I was his assistant, and he looked at me, and he goes, you should produce it. Why don't you produce this for me? And that was it. That was the jump from, I went from assistant to producing.
How did he know you could do it?
What does producer mean? For people that don't know, I've always kind of struggled with that. Okay, director makes sense. An editor makes sense. What does a producer do?
By the way, my parents still have no idea what I do for a living. You know, producer is kind of like a GM, a little bit of a sports team, and really, but more so, it's like I basically fit in every, I'm like the glue guy. No matter, like, you know, with the filmmaker, director, showrunner on a TV show, if they don't like, they're not strong at casting, they're not strong at development, they're not strong in the editing room, they hate dealing with the network, studio, I basically fill in. And some people need more than others. Mike White, who I do White Lotus with, is a genius. And, you know, my job on White Lotus is different than Jury Duty, which was an idea that I had conceived with another producer. And you know, we went to writers with it and then sold it. And that one requires a much more of a creative lift. And so producers, really, every project's a different kind of skill set.
Do you do funding too, or is that just another part? Like, that's the studio just takes care of that.
And that's the confusing part, is that some producers just finance.
Okay.
I go out and raise financing, like D-Train or Immaculate.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Was an idea that we conceived and then went out and raised financing.
So how does that work? Who do you go to?
So Immaculate, for example, that was a movie. I had Sydney Sweeney. I had a horror script. I was watching Sydney on season one of White Lotus. There was these kind of darker scenes. And I was sitting and I was looking at her on the monitor. I was like, she's brilliant. And she would be brilliant in a horror movie. And I literally went up to her between takes and said, we should do a horror movie together. She's like, I love horror. Let's do it. Then we spent about a year looking for the right project. This was a script that she had read before and loved. And she's like, if you get the rights to this, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So then I had Sydney, I had the script, and I basically went out to, there's financiers in Hollywood, that everyone, there's like 15 great ones. So we basically sent the script around. We had 6 offers. And then we basically went with this guy, Teddy Schwarzman, his company Black Bear. And so they fully financed it, gave us $12 million. And, you know, that's it.
I see the budget on that was $9 million, makes 35 plus. So
yeah,
that's got to really be considered a success.
That was a major success.
And you're making 4 extra money, right?
Yeah.
All right, we want to talk about White Lotus. Should we bring him back?
Yes. Yeah, oh, God.
All right. So, David, bring you back. We'll talk about White Lotus. Talk about, I mean, over the years, we've talked about you because we like saw you holding hands with Kate Hudson, or I don't know if she was holding hands.
I didn't have lunch. I mean, what a life, this guy.
But I'll tell you, like, people text me when they hear you guys. It's still my friend Kevin Miller, who's probably listening now. I was in Thailand, maybe drunk last week. Someone texts me, and I'm like, how do I get in touch with these guys? Yeah. And you guys are making fun of me, which I love.
Yeah,
I love
so
it.
Yeah, yeah. So,
right,
our pal, Plank David, David Bernad, host of, the producer of White Lotus, will join us for more next.